We are seeking fertile minds where the seeds of voluntarism and non-aggression may be planted in hopes of cultivating the next crop of free-thinking and freedom-loving individuals. This is the Seeds of Liberty podcast with Danilo, Dave, and Jeremy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Seeds of Liberty podcast, episode 10. Today we have Skylar J. Collins, and he runs the everythingvoluntary.com website, and he's also got Everything Voluntary Facebook page, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about the Naugler family incident in Kentucky. He's got some interesting inside information that he's willing to share with us. So, Skylar, thanks for coming on the show. So why don't you start off with telling us a little bit about how you became a voluntarist?
Well, it started 10 years ago when I first discovered the weekly columns of two economists by the names of Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell, two black economists. And what caught my attention was they were writing on race issues as well as the economics. And so they were talking about minimum wage and how minimum wage hurts black teenagers the worst and, you know, things like that. And that kind of caught my attention. And I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, let's listen to what these guys have to talk about. They're black, so they're obviously not racist against other blacks. If it was a white person writing on these, I might have dismissed it, not actually read it and considered what they were saying. And so that's what introduced me to economics. And it was from there that I discovered the Foundation for Economic Education. Eventually, I discovered the Mises Institute and Austrian economics and libertarianism and then anarchism and then voluntarism. So that's kind of it. That's kind of everything in a nutshell.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I follow those economists pretty closely as well. They're pretty intelligent guys. Although I think if I'm not mistaken, I think Walter Williams is not like necessarily an anarchist, right? Is that true, Jeremy?
No, he calls himself a libertarian.
Yeah.
But no, he doesn't claim to. Neither does Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell is more of a conservative as well. He's definitely a free market guy. He leans Chicago School / Hayekian. He's not a Misesian. He's definitely not an ANCAP. So.
Yeah, yeah. So, and the Chicago School is like, I think they still claim the Federal Reserve is necessary, something like that, right?
Yeah, they're monetarists. They think something needs to be done. It's the Milton Friedman tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. All right. So so tell us a little bit about the Naugler family incident and, you know, what you've been learning about that.
Well, it was, I think it when this all got started, it was last Thursday, my messenger app on my phone just started going wild with dings, you know, just ding, 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 ding. I'm like, what the crap is going on? And I looked at it, and my friend Pace Ellsworth, who has been directing the support effort, had created a chat group with 50 of us. And we know Nicole through a Mormon anarchist group. I'm not currently a practicing Mormon, and a lot of people are. It's a really, you know, kind of Mormon and ex or post-Mormon kind of mix, and it's pretty peaceful. You know, there's not like anti, you know, fights or anything like that. But so I've known Nicole for probably a year now since she's been in that group, you know, and she posts all the time on different things, either, you know, Mormon-related or parenting-related or, you know, just kind of general run-of-the-mill stuff. And I've also seen a lot of the stuff she's put on regarding the way that her family lives, their lifestyle and the projects that they have going on and the things that they've built there on their little homestead. Anyway, so Pace created this group chat with maybe 50 of us and said, hey, Nicole's been arrested. The kids have been taken. And these are 10. She has 10 kids with one on the way. She's 5 months pregnant. And we're like, well, you know, so I just kind of read through as much as I could everything that was going on. And I don't know. I think people are probably generally familiar with the situation right now. Nicole was at her house with her two oldest sons. And the reason that they were there alone was earlier in the week, they had noticed some sheriff's cars at the edge of their property. They own 23 acres that includes forests and a pond and then their makeshift cabin that they built themselves with the help of their kids. They have like an outdoor kitchen and they have, you know, other areas. They've got what's called a compost toilet. So they compost all of their waste, and they have, you know, goats and chickens and dogs and cats, you know, so it's kind of a thing here. And you can go to the Blessed Little Homesteading Facebook page and see, and you can even go to, I think it's blessedlittlehomesteading.blogspot.com or myblessedlittlehomestead.com. I'll have to verify those for you, and you can put them in your show notes. But you can see, I mean, she's, their lives have been very transparent. Every week she's putting up pictures of the projects they're working on and the adventures that the kids are having. And like I said, there's 10 kids, and so all of them are doing different things. And they're all basically learning learning these valuable skills of building from the ground up a homestead. I mean, it's pretty amazing to see. I mean, are they running around in bare feet in dirt and, I guess, animal feces here and there? Well, yeah, they live with animals, so of course they're going to step in that stuff. I mean, you know, that's some of the criticisms they've been receiving is, oh, these kids sleep in feces all day. Of course they should be taken away, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway. Wow. But yeah, I mean, it's like a you know, a year-long camping trip, basically. And like I said, anyways, they built a cabin. Anyway, so the situation was earlier in the week, I think Monday or Tuesday, they noticed some sheriffs at the end of their property. So they're like, what's going on here? And they had been harassed before early, you know, they've had this property for 18 months. They've been in this area for 18 months. Prior to that, they were kind of moving around a bit for a year. And prior to that, they had a house. And again, this is all transparent and documented on their blogs and stuff. And there's pictures every week and so on and so forth. Anyway, so they had developed a plan that if, you know, these guys show up again, you know, everybody go to the other edge of the property and just wait for mom and dad to make sure everything's okay, you know. Because they're well aware that they are not mainstream. Okay, this is an intentional homesteading project. It's an intentional unschooling family, peaceful parenting, radical unschooling. Their kids are not in school, and they've attracted some attention from neighbors, you know, who see that there's these 10 kids and they're not in school all day long running around in, you know, without shoes on and whatever, and it's attracted some unwanted attention. And so they've had, you know, sheriffs kind of visit them before and child protective services visit them before. Anyway, so they had this plan to go to the other edge of the property and then mom and dad would figure it out. So that's what happened. But then after that first incident, they decided, okay, let's go stay at a friend's for a couple of days. And so the entire family did that. Nicole and the two oldest went back to the house, I think just to get some stuff. And that's when these sheriffs showed up. And Nicole has released the audio. She immediately started recording like a good libertarian would. The entire incident, you can listen all about it. And the guy's there and he doesn't have any warrants. And she keeps telling him, no, you can't search my property. No, you can't talk to my kids. Come back with a warrant. Come back with our lawyers. And they just push the issue. They end up getting into their cabin and looking around, and, you know, and the guy's like, well, we received a tip, and you know, your neighbor's saying that, and the cop sounds like, you know, he's kind of like, well, I really don't believe it, but this was the complaint, you know. So he's being very diplomatic and he's being very friendly with them, and you can tell all this again on the audio. It's all available there on the saveourfamily.info website. Anyway, and she continues to deny him. You know, she doesn't want to cooperate with them, and she doesn't have to. She's not obligated to cooperate with them. You know, so she eventually, towards the end, she's like, "Okay, well, I'm gonna get in my car and drive off, but you're probably gonna find some excuse to pull me over." And the sheriff say, "No, we don't do stuff like that." So she gets in her car. 20 seconds later, they pull her over. Wow. One of the sheriffs is on the phone with a judge saying, "Hey, we want to take the kids. You know, she's not being cooperative. You know, we saw where they live, and it's, you know, not." It's not on the up and up according to our standards, our mainstream standards. And so we want to take the kids, and the judge gave them the okay. And that's when, on the audio, Nicole just loses it. You can't take my son, and she's freaking out yelling at him because, you know, she's a mama bear and you're stealing her cubs, you know. So that's when she loses it, and they end up arresting her. And again, she's 5 months pregnant, but she's got bruises on her arms from it, and she was forced under the hood of the car, put in handcuffs. And again, this is all recorded. And they charge her with disorderly and resisting arrest because, you know, they think we have an obligation to participate in
our own kidnapping. How can you be disorderly on your own property?
Exactly. Well, and I don't know if they were still on their property. They were driving away. They may have been off their property. Anyway.
They shouldn't have left. They should have waited for the sheriff to leave.
Oh, right. Just, yeah, instead of just getting the cart. Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so then Joe pulled up with a friend and his audio was also available on the website. And, you know, at first the sheriff's wanting to impound the car, but he's like, no, I'm here. You can't impound it, you know, because that's just an unnecessary fee. You know, why would you take my car? And so, you know, he orders Joe to get back in the car. So Joe gets back in the car and the friend is like, hey, can I be the mediator here and you know, talk? And Joe is handling it very well. And so the friend negotiates and lets him take the car so they don't impound it. And the sheriff basically says, bring the rest of your kids to the station tomorrow by 10 a.m. or I'm going to arrest you for a felony. You know, it's just really kind of like just the way it goes down just has that taste of what's the word I'm looking for?
Lack of due process.
Well, lack of due process, but also like spite. Like he's just so pissed that he's just like, bring the rest of your kids and blah blah blah. Anyway, so you know, they comply with that the next day, but it was that night Joe, after taking the car back home, got on the phone and sent the message to Pace saying Nicole's been arrested, two of the kids have been taken, the rest they want to take. And that's when Pace created the chat group and invited 40 of us in. So I kind of followed it initially, and it's been ongoing ever since. The chat itself is over 5,000 messages, you know, a week later, probably more by now.
So what happened with the court Monday? I've been keeping up with it, but I haven't been intently paying attention.
So Monday, if I remember, they had their inspection with Child Protective Services. The kids right now are in four different houses in four different counties. Monday they had the inspection, and according to them, they passed the inspection, and the CPS passed it, and they're not requiring that they change anything. But the judge, because they have hearings for their arrests, and okay, so Joe was also charged with a misdemeanor menacing. Okay, because the complaint was that he was trying to get water from the neighbor, and according to the Noglers, they had agreements with their neighbor to get water out of their well, and so he went there to try to get water. But I guess earlier he had unfriended her on Facebook, and so she was like, "No, you can't have water. You know, there's enmity between us now. Whatever, please leave." And according to them, that's what happened. They left without any water and without any threats. But the complaint lists that he threatened them, and he even told his son, "Go get my gun," you know, just this weird thing, and that he stole the water. Anyway, so it's he said, she said. So he was charged with menacing, and then she has her disorderly conduct and her resisting arrest. So what I believe has happened is the judge has not allowed the kids to be returned, even though they passed the CPS inspection. And right now, and people have asked and demanded that they release some sort of proof that the CPS inspection passed. But they can't because it's kind of locked up in these ongoing cases. So anyways, the judge is not letting the kids be released until these other matters are resolved.
They're not felonies, so...
Yeah, they're not even felonies.
They're misdemeanors, so even if they did get found guilty of them, which they're probably not because of how the disorderly and out of the law the officers acted, they wouldn't even go to jail for them, so they're probably just going to get a fine, which they're just going to start a Kickstarter or a GoFundMe, and everyone's going to pay it.
Yeah, so initially, that next day, Pace did set up a GoFundMe, and you know, I spread the link around, and everybody involved spread the link around. It was picked up by Off the Grid News. Eventually, it was picked up by Police State Daily, and after that, throughout the last week, it's been picked up all over the place. You know, all of these, you know, not any mainstream news sites, but all of these independent ones. But that GoFundMe page did reach 47,000 within 7 days. And then they did turn it off, and they've changed their help button to it goes to a page where you can use PayPal now at this point, or even Bitcoin. I think they have a widget, or they're going to put a widget up there. Because a lot of people have said, oh, well, I want to donate Bitcoin. You know, so.
I think they should sue the state.
Well, yeah, the state thinks it had a wild card because Joe actually has another son that's 19 years old that he lost when the kid was 4 or 5. I think Joe was like myself when I was a new father. Until my son was 5, I would yell at him and I would spank him and I would get pretty ugly. I think Joe may have been the same way. So the kid was visiting some family in New Hampshire, and this is when I believe they lived in Texas, and the kid was visiting some family in New Hampshire, and I guess my guess is that the kid may have said something about my dad spanking me, and they immediately went to Child Protective Services for an emergency hearing. But then they only gave the Joe and Nicole 3 hours to get there, you know, and they didn't have money and they didn't have time to get from Texas in that, you know, to New Hampshire in that time. And so by default on that technicality, he lost his son. And so, you know, the state now, during that hearing on Monday, the state had flown him in, and he's 19 now. And I guess his testimony was that he was physically abused and that he was sexually abused. But along the course of being questioned by the defense attorney, the Nogler's attorney, at some point, he basically had even the prosecutor shaking his head like, I can't believe I have this witness up here. This guy's obviously not very credible. So what I think's happened, and Nicole actually wrote about this, what she calls the story of Alex. The kid's name is Alex. And the situation, she wrote about it in 2013 on her blog, kind of that whole situation and how they lost him because they weren't given the opportunity to fight for him, and that he absolutely was never sexually abused, and the most Joe ever did was spank him, and I just, you know, I'm picturing myself in that personally. So the state thought they had a wild card, and a lot of people have, you know, taken that and condemned the Noglers, thinking that, and the kid himself, he had a press conference after the hearing with the sheriff, and he said that, I'm only concerned about the other kids and I want to get them out of that home because they're being abused too, and blah 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 blah. I mean, if you look at the history of the Noglers and you look at, you know, again, their transparency, and again, they put up pictures every week on the things that they do, the kids are obviously happy, they're obviously healthy, and they're obviously safe. So what this has really become, and this is something I wrote this week, is it's become a battle of ideologies, right? There are people who, you know, ideologically, they're against primitivism and off the grid and homesteading and that sort of thing, which there are elements of that here. And they think, you know, the kids should be in a house and they shouldn't be running around in the dirt all day. But there's other ideological battles here too, right? There's individualism versus collectivism. You know, the state has statism versus anarchism. The state has a right to come in and take your kids. There's just all these different battles kind of being waged right now. And the Noglers have found a ton of support, absolutely a lot of support, but they've also found a lot of the opposite. It's really been kind of a dividing, controversial issue for them, and it's because of the way that they choose intentionally to live close to nature as possible. So there are those primitivist elements, and again, they're anarchists. They're also homeschoolers, and so the kids aren't in school, and so that's another battleground. But you know, they're fighting through it now. Nicole, last week, she actually was supposed to open on her new business. She has been a dog groomer for 20 years, and she has an amazing clientele, and her clients absolutely love her. And so she finally decided to start her own business, and that's something that her and Pace have been working on since December. Pace Ellsworth started a cryptocurrency crowdsourcing company called Capistan. Sounds familiar. It's based on Ancapistan, right? And she is the first client of that, and I think they raised like $20,000 through that. And so she's, you know, in the middle of opening this business when this happens. And so that's kind of what they spent this week doing, is doing a lot of furniture shopping and that kind of stuff. And that's just invited more criticism because people say, well, why aren't you fighting to get your kids back? What are you worrying about your business for? And it's like, you guys are idiots. For starters, there's nothing they can do. Things are scheduled, and they can't get their kids back. Okay, they can't just go get them. And this is their livelihood. They have to do what they can do. They have to continue moving forward in every area. And so that's, you know, those are criticisms that are just, you know, ignorant, as a lot of them have been. But anyway, so that's kind of the entire incident in a nutshell. So hopefully, you know, the money that they've got will definitely accelerate their projects. They had already had plans to build a bigger cabin by September, before all of this started. They have a rain collection project that they started. I understand they've been given some solar equipment, has been donated to them for this, to help them out in that area with electricity. And so this money will help accelerate a lot of their projects. But, you know, again, they're still not going to build like a modern house and this and that. They want to live the way that they've been living. It's a chosen, intentional lifestyle. So, yeah, there it is.
Wow.
Any questions?
Well, you touched on, you know, with the estranged son, because that was the one part of the story that I saw, but I didn't get a chance to follow up on. And, you know, based on what you said, I mean, if even the prosecutor was shaking his head, then it does seem like there might be some spite involved there too. I mean, if something did happen to him, I mean, that's horrible, obviously, but if he hasn't been around them since he was five, is that basically what you're saying with that? If he was taken away from them when he was like five or something like that, like, and he's 19
That's correct.
Now, yeah. How?
Yeah, you know, he was four or five, and he was taken by Joe's uncle, and according to Joe and Nicole, and this again is according to them, they understand that uncle was pretty harsh with him, and Nicole will also tell you that she has a cousin that has told her that uncle would grope her and be abusive towards her. Mm. And so what I think has happened is this uncle probably talked a lot of smack about Joe, probably convinced this kid that he was being abused. And if he was being spanked, he probably used that to convince him that he was being sexually abused, right? You spank on the butt, that's a sexual organ, you're being sexually abused, right? So this kid was probably told this early on. And then who knows what happened, you know, abuse-wise going forward. And now if you look at the kid's Facebook page today, I feel really bad and I have a lot of sympathy for this kid because he is really messed up. I mean, he is just talking all sorts of craziness. Okay, and you can – if I don't know. You want me to tell you his name? He's already kind of public out there because he's testified. I'll give you the link and you can put it in the show notes if you want. But I don't – you know, I wouldn't
– No, we're not going to brigade or anything like that.
No. Sure. I mean, what I said though, I mean, unfortunately, when it comes to that aspect of the story, it's still kind of, I guess, he said, she said stuff.
Sure.
You know, you don't know, but everything else, I mean, unfortunately, we've talked about it on our show numerous times already. This is the state in action. You know, mm-hmm. like everything you said, it was a nosy neighbor who complained. And somebody who thinks they're doing right will just run to the state. And this is what happens, you know? I mean, like you said, they're so transparent about their lifestyle. It's not like they're trying, you know, if they're hiding something, they're really good. it's sad that they have to go through this just because they want to live their life a certain way and they want to raise their kids that way. You know, I mean, I support them in general for what they were trying to do in the first place. I mean, that's something ever since I came to volunteerism, that's kind of something I've dreamed of doing with my family too, like moving off, you know, maybe not necessarily off the grid right away, but I'd love to be involved in something like that too. And it's a shame that so many people, just as you said, you know, it's outside the mainstream, so they think it must be bad and they will stick their nose in because, well, I didn't raise my kids like that and nobody should raise their kids like that. And the funny thing, you said a couple of times about, you know, the complaints, well, they're in the dirt all the time. Well, what's wrong with that? They're kids. Like, most people baby the heck out of their kids and are always cleaning them up and using the, you know, the antibacterial soap and the antibacterial, you know, hand wipes and all that stuff. And it's like, you wonder why your kids are sick all the time? Because you're not letting them get out and play in the dirt. And here's this family who's letting them live that life, you know? And as you said, all outward appearances are that the kids are happy with this and they're having fun. And it's just because somebody else is unhappy with that decision that their whole life can be turned upside down. And that's, you know, for people like us, that's a scary proposition because, you know, anybody who wants to do even just a homeschooling, unschooling, you know, we talked about that in last week's episode. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you just want to do that, even if you don't want to go the homesteading route, you know, depending on what state you're in, you can face a lot of not just criticism, but you face that constant threat of, you know, the CPS or whatever the ridiculous agency is called in your particular state, you know, cracking down on you and breathing down your neck. And if you're not doing things the way they approve of, then they're going to send a SWAT team to your door. You know, I mean, Dave, you'd said earlier that, you know, why she left the property.
I mean, unfortunately, I don't think that was one of those things, at least as far as I've read into it. It's not one of those things she could have really waited out, because they were obviously stalking the place for days beforehand, you know, and staking the whole area out. So somebody was going to be sitting on that property, whether she left right then or whether she waited 2 hours or 4 hours or 10 hours. And obviously, I'm sure she was just trying to get the family back together because, you know, Skylar, as you said, it was probably just a last run to pick up some last minute, you know, items. And you just want to get the whole family back together. That's why they all left. And now they have to deal with this. It's, you know, there's so many people out there that would see this. And like you said, that the ignorant comments and the ignorant thoughts. And it's just, well, it's they're doing things that they shouldn't be. So, of course, they should be punished. It's like, no, the kids are getting punished. You know, I mean, how many times do you see stories? Well, you won't see it in the mainstream news, but if you read the alternative news like we do, you know, how many times kids get taken away from their parents and put into these, you know, even if it's a temporary foster care situation, you know, and they end up getting beaten, raped, killed by the foster parents because these people aren't, you know, they're not vetted very heavily. You know, a lot of states have places, you know, have populations that want to be foster parents just for the money they get for it. And, you know, there's been stories before of kids getting taken away because the parent, they found pot on the parent. And it's like, okay, he wasn't hurting anybody. They weren't doing it around the kids. What's the problem? Oh, no, we need to take him away. And then the poor child gets beaten in the foster care home. And it's like, mm-hmm. You know, it really boils down to just people, unfortunately, meddling in other people's business when they don't really know what's going on. And just because it looks weird to them, they think their first instinct is, oh, I got to call somebody. Something must be done. It's that whole, you know, there ought to be a law crowd. It's They are actually, I consider those people a bigger danger to me on an everyday basis than the actual agents of the state. It's those people that have nothing better to do with their lives than try to bend everybody else to their will. You know, I think they are actually the greatest danger to people like ourselves.
Cowards. Yeah. Well, my point on this whole situation is a very easy one. You don't see the government doing this to the Mennonites. You don't see the government's doing this to the Amish or the Quakers or et cetera, et cetera. You know, let's get out, move out here and block our, isolate ourselves out from the rest of the world, which they're not doing. I mean, that's why I think more and more that voluntarism should be a state-recognized religion.
To get those protections, I understand that. Yeah,
yeah. Someone should file for that.
I just wanted to say, probably the main thing that should be concerning for everybody, whether you're a libertarian or not, is that when the sheriffs got there and they asked, and they didn't have a warrant, they didn't have probable cause, and they just asked if they could talk to the kids and if they could search the place, and they were told no. It was at that point that they should have left, because they did not leave, right? But for them staying, that was the point of escalation. And so, you know, whatever, everything that happened after that was but for that cause of them not leaving and going and getting a warrant or going and filing something with CPS and then letting CPS come out and do an inspection. Because I understand that the initial CPS inspection does not involve sheriffs. They just come out and knock on your door and say, hey, we got this complaint. It's only when, you know, when it escalates from there that they'll come back with sheriffs if they need to. But this was just the sheriffs. This wasn't even with the CPS. And they didn't have a warrant. They didn't have probable cause. And I think that's something that everybody should be concerned with when they aren't even following their own rules, which, you know, is par for the course. We understand that as libertarians and as anarchists, but everybody else needs to see that. And that's why I think the audio, you know, was such a good thing to release. I mean, the audio is always a good thing to release. It's done nothing but got them more support. So
I was just going to say that, you know, Jeremy, you brought up a good point about the snitches. And I think that kind of reminds me of the recent George Reisman article on, you know, Nazi, you know, National Socialist Party, where you're saying that was a very big part of that is you know, it's not only people afraid of the state and what the state can do to them, but people being fearful of their own neighbor for snitching on them. So it's like people, you know, they can make a law about like, regulating particular products, and then people would choose to interact in the black market. But then if you're afraid of snitches, then you're even afraid to interact in the black market, right? Because that person could be a government agent or a snitch, right? And so it's
well, they made that law in Lenin made that law in Russia. If you saw your neighbor hoarding food more than what they needed, if you didn't report them, you would get a more severe punishment than the person's hoarding food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1984.
Yeah, I was just saying that the state really relies on people to intimidate, you know, their neighbor, right? That's another, you know, we were talking about fear being a major tenet of statism. It's fear of your neighbor, fear of what your neighbor might do, or fear that people are the monsters that the government schools try to make them out to be, and so we should put our faith in government, in Uncle Sam, right? That he's going to take care of us and protect us from our neighbor. But when in fact, when we do that, when we empower the state, we become the monsters that we fear other people will become. Right? And CPS is basically legal kidnapping, right? It's like you said, Jeremy, you know, there are much worse much worse results occur when kids are, you know, detached from their own family.
And in most cases, yeah.
In most, yeah, the majority of the cases, vast majority of the cases, they're in a much worse off situation. They're medicated like beyond belief. Since CPS has an incentive to, in order to receive more funds, they diagnose more psychiatric disorders with the children, and then they get, you know, more funding for the medication. And the kids are drugged up, they're abused, they're beaten, they're, you know, all this kind of stuff, and, you know, so many times more likely to be abused and killed and all that kind of stuff. And it's really tragic how people, they like you said, Jeremy, they call CPS out of the goodness of their hearts, which is kind of interesting. You know, it's so sad.
Well,
just,
I mean, no one's,
you know, they don't
no
understand the monster they're unleashing. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
No one's discounting, like, or no one's saying that there aren't some cases where CPS saves a kid's life. Like, that happens. All right, that's not the point anyone's making when they're making an anti-CPS.
A clock is right twice a day, right?
Well, yeah, I'm not. That's not justification for it to
exist. Broken clock. Broken.
Well, of course. There's good and bad out of most government agencies. You know, certain times good things will happen, but that's not the point. The point is it's the only game in town, so you can't just sweep the bad stuff under the rug. And, you know, even if it's, you know, half good and bad, it's still, you know, I think I've said this before, it drives me nuts, because a lot of the people that will make the argument to say that, oh, we need programs like this because we have to protect the children, are the same ones that are, you know, a lot of them are anti-gunners, and they use the, you know, if it saves just one child rhetoric. Well, where is that thinking in this? If it saves just one child, well, you know, kids die. Even if just one child dies through CPS, why are you not using the same argument? You know, and then Danilo, you were touching on, you know, what I had said about the snitches and stuff. And yeah, that's the horizontal enforcement. That is actually where the state gains a lot of its power. I mean, we've talked about it before. It starts with the belief in authority. But once you have that belief in your head, once you believe the state is necessary and that certain people are allowed to be in a position of authority over you, well, it makes it that much easier for you to participate in the system, because the state, no matter what state it is, no matter what time in history it is, they are always severely outnumbered by the citizenry. So what's to stop the citizenry from turning around on them one day and saying, well, we don't want this anymore? Well, that's where the horizontal enforcement comes in, because when you have the majority of people that believe in this system and believe that it's legitimate, they'll turn people in for anything just because, oh, somebody's breaking the law, I have to say something. You know, you talked about, you know, Dave, you talked about how Lenin did that stuff. It's even the same here, the whole see something, say something thing campaign that started after 9/11. You know, that's basically what it is. Like, yes, do you want to protect people from bad things happening to them? If you're a good moral person, yes. but to run to the state just because they say if you see something, say something, it's, you know, it turns into so much worse than that, because people just start, people are in a panic and they're afraid, so they'll just report anybody for anything that seems out of the ordinary. And when it comes to people like us, that a lot of the aspects of our lives seem out of the ordinary to the average citizen, we're a constant target. You know, Skylar, you had said about, you know, I guess kind of the mistakes that were made and led to the escalation. You know, that's the unfortunate thing, though, because somebody like the Naugler family, who knew their rights, and, you know, and you said, Nicole, you know, specifically said, you're not allowed here. I'm not, you know. Most people don't even know that. Most people see a cop come to their property and they'll just go, okay, if a cop says, can I come in and have a look around? Well, they're holding a gun and they got this shiny badge. Must mean they know something. So, okay, sure. Most people won't even hesitate. And the people like us that will put up a fight, we are actually standing up for the purported purposes of the constitutional system and how we're supposed to have rights that are protected. Like, we say things that should get us technically out of trouble with the cops, but most law enforcement hates people that exert their rights. I mean, I had to deal with this recently where I had a run-in with the cops, and I was very, you know, I've actually had two in the past year, and the first time it didn't go so well because I exerted my rights, and the cop took umbrage with that and ended up slapping some cuffs on me just because I refused to give him my license. You know, the next time around I got lucky because I got some cops that apparently had dealt with issues like that before, and they actually called the sergeant in to make sure my rights weren't violated, you know. But the average person, they don't realize that. They see that authority figure and they will bow down, and those are the people that end up getting their kids taken away a lot, because they don't know. They think, you know, they'll think, oh, if I haven't done anything wrong, I'll be okay. And I'll just, you know, they'll let the kids, you know, they'll let the kids go off with the cops, assuming that, you know, I haven't done anything wrong, I'll get them back. But once you let them in, you know, a lot of times they'll find things. They'll
it's
make
like a vampire.
They'll make up stuff. That, yeah. they'll find the littlest thing to trump up a charge, because, as you touched on, Danilo, unfortunately, you know, the CPS and agencies like that, They're a part of the government, so of course their funding originally comes from an extorted place. But there is that connection with, like, the pharmaceutical companies, like you were talking about, and how they drug these kids up. So all these people have a vested interest in making sure, you know, just like the prison system has a vested interest in making sure they stayed filled. CPS and these agencies have a vested interest in getting their hands on as many kids as possible, all in the name of, you know, good. So that they can continue to line their own pockets, and it's quite sickening. And too many people just don't want to look at that aspect, and they will just keep the blinders on and say, "Oh, we're protecting the children. They protect the children." And it's so many times it's the exact opposite.
I just one of the issue, and I kind of like the see something, say something, because I think we can turn that around on, you know, the agents of the state themselves. If you see them doing something, pull out your phone and record it and then say something, you know. Yeah. But I think, you know, and I also don't mind when neighbors are being a little nosy and they think something might be wrong, you know, because if somebody was at my house, or somebody who I thought was a friend was with my kids and he was maybe being inappropriate, I would want a neighbor to call, or to call me, or to report that to somebody. But the problem, I think, comes when there is a call and thing, you know, and they get involved and things escalate and they take the kids, and then later it's determined, hopefully by an impartial judge, which, you know, we don't have right now, that it's seen as not being an issue. Those people who took your kids should be liable for that, and right now they're not. They have what I'm sure you're familiar with called, and police officers have this too, called qualified immunity. So you can't turn around and go after them for, you know, acting, you know, for pulling the trigger a little too early, you know, because they're not responsible for that. And so that disincentivizes their behavior, right? Or because the incentive to be a little bit more careful is taken away, because now they're not liable for their mistakes. In fact, I mean, how many federal agencies, when they make mistakes and they fail, it's an excuse for more funding. You know, that's kind of a common
argument. If we would have only had more money.
Right, we could have investigated a little bit better. Yeah, and so, you know, the incentives, again, are the other way. I did want to say this. I think that the Nogglers, they've got some funds now to, like I said, speed up some of the projects that they had planned, improve their area a little bit, and that'll be good, and people will like to see that. But their kids are suffering right now, right? You've got everyone from, I think the youngest is two and a half, you know, to the oldest who's 15 or 16 maybe. And those little ones, they don't have mom and dad right now, and they're suffering for that. And so I think this needs to be a lesson to the Nogglers to say, look, I think as individuals, we should stick to our principles, and we should stick, you know, we should do what we can. I think civil disobedience in that regard is good, and I think standing for your principles is good. But there's a point where your actions cause suffering for somebody else, somebody who's innocent. And these kids are innocent in that, and you're causing suffering for them. So I think the lesson for them is to improve your property, and continue the transparency with your improvements. Let the world know that, you know, your kids are safe and they are healthy. And I think they've done a really good job of showing that. But make the improvements that, you know, I hate to say it, but maybe you should move a little bit towards mainstream. I think it's a self-defensive move, not only for yourselves, but more importantly for your kids, because you don't want your kids to have to suffer through this again. So, I think civil disobedience is a virtue when it involves yourself, but when that inflicts suffering and harm on innocent third parties, that's when I kind of start to pull back a little bit. What do you guys think about that?
Well, I would push back a little bit, that only from my own personal perspective. I actually recently did a little rant on this for my little side project that I do, because it's a tough spot for somebody who actually is principled. I mean, I think you're right to an extent that, you know, it would it make it easier, and are, you know, are the children getting unfairly punished? Absolutely. You know, for me though, it comes down to not only being principled for myself, but like with my children. You know, I have two young girls at home, and I've been, you know, most of their lives already, I've been trying to teach them this stuff, and trying to, you know, introduce these the ideas and the principles that I believe in, you know, hoping that they'll understand it and accept it as well. I'm not forcing it upon them, but I'm, you know, trying to, you know, butter them up a little bit, and hopefully they see it. But when it comes down to situations like this, yes, you want to be with them, obviously, and you don't want them taken away. But for me, I have a hard time looking at that and saying, okay, well, if I do, you know, if I play ball a little bit, and I, you know, I, as you said, you know, go a little more mainstream, so there's not as much trouble. I have a hard time being able to look them in the eye after that and still try to teach them these things. You know, I mean, sure, I could teach them, okay, daddy had to play ball just so we could get this because this is the situation we live in now. But if I'm trying to be principled and trying to teach them about principle, like, how do I look them in the eye after that? You know, like I said, what you're saying makes sense. But for me, I struggle with that because I want to be able, I try to be as open and honest with my kids as possible. And it's hard for me to get over that by saying, well, you know, I just had to compromise this one time, because that's the same argument I use against politicians when people say to me, oh, this guy's a good guy and, you know, he'll do things for us. I'm like, no, because you can see right now he's already compromised his principles once to play the game, you know. So I put that same lens on me, and I'm like, well, are you going to compromise to make things easier in the short term? You know, how much is that going to set them back? How much am I going to have to now reteach them later on? You know, these are just the things that I think about when it comes to that.
I think the whole gun to the head argument could be made against yours, Jeremy. But, I mean, at what point, like, how far do you take, you know, I'd rather die on my feet than live on my knees, you know? Where's the line? What line do you draw at that point? You know, like, because I pay taxes, and I can't honestly say, I mean, because there's a gun to my head. I pay taxes or I don't work and lose everything and then become a welfare parasite, or live in the woods. I mean, what do I do here? Like, my hands are tied behind my back.
It's a question of your values, you know. I mean, what do you value more than anything other? And some people, they value their principles more than their own lives. For some people, they value their principles more than their lives and the lives of their loved ones. I wrote an essay once on pacifism, and I wrote that I think pacifism is great, and it's definitely a voluntarist compatible philosophy. But I draw the line at strict pacifism. I think if you're laying down your life, and you laying down your life has the result of your loved ones getting killed, to me, that's not honorable at all. You know, because again, it's introducing that suffering. Now, to go to Jeremy's point, you want to be that example to your kids of somebody who stands by their principles. And I think the older Nogler kids will see that, and I hope that's the lesson they take, and that will make them stronger, you know, as they get older and they enter that adult world. The younger kids, of course, they won't understand that at all. They just know that their mommy and their daddy's not there. And so, you know, maybe later on that, you know, that can be explained. I think if they build a good relationship with their kids, one based on love and respect and closeness, which I believe they are, then later on, you know, that relationship will be repaired. You know, the temporary setback with being separated that really hurts a relationship, that can be repaired. And then as kids get older, they can kind of come to understand things, unless it becomes a perpetual thing. You know, then what will happen is they'll start to resent mom and dad. Mom and dad, you could have prevented this, but you didn't. You must not love us very much because you let them keep taking us. You know, and that can be very damaging, I mean, too. So there is definitely a fine line there.
Yeah.
Especially the more kids you have. They got 10 kids.
I mean, I'd honestly rather be dead in a ditch somewhere than have 10 kids. I'm not like you guys are laughing, but I
Dave's
honestly
sensitivity.
No, Dave, we know you're serious. That's why we're laughing.
It's literally dead serious. Like if my girlfriend got pregnant and they said quintuplets or quadruplets or whatever, I would. It would be a
Where's my gun?
It would be hard not to either fake my own death and move to Costa Rica. Oh, God. I don't know. It just scares the shit out of me. I can't imagine having a kid right now, and I'm almost 30.
So. Well, and that's because we're all living in an unnatural human. Human beings evolved in tribes, and they evolved in extended family households, you know. So having a baby was not a terrible burden because there were so many people to share that burden with. But now the single family household is just such an natural thing that kids don't have their needs met, and mom and dad don't have their needs met when they do have a lot of kids like this. So right now, Nicole is doing her business in pet grooming. Joe, my hell, Joe is an impressive guy. He's at home teaching the kids, you know, to build the homestead and all the different projects. And he's also the primary unschooler, you know, with all the kids, from the little kids to the older kids. And the older kids, of course, help out. And they're learning to become great fathers themselves. I think they have like two or three girls out of all of them, so they're mostly boys. So when these kids are all adults, I mean, that, you know, just watch out, because they're going to be peaceful parents, they're going to be unschoolers, and they're going to have these skills to survive the zombie apocalypse, for hell's sake.
I mean, I would honestly pick the life that those kids are currently having over what I experienced as a child. You know, I'm an Alabama boy. I grew up in the woods, running out in the woods all day. You know, it wasn't just sit in the house and play Game Boy all day. It was mom would lock us out of the house and say, go play in the woods, and when you get back, we'll do a tick check. So it was.
Your mom would be arrested right now for that.
Yeah.
Well,
you guys would be taken away. You know,
not in Alabama. maybe downtown Birmingham, where, you know, there's really no reason why like somebody should be running around downtown, but not where I grew up, man. I grew up out in the woods.
I can sympathize a lot with Jeremy because him and I are in a similar position with the young kids, and I often have this argument with my wife too, Like, you know, you know, ever since I've known her, she's always known me to be contrarian and, you know, always to be difficult. You got to be
That's
difficult.
That's where I get cold.
You just got to be different. Why don't you just, like, fit in? You know, and I'm like, I'm sorry, you know, I read, I learn about new things and I like to express them, you know, and my wife is the type of person, she's like, I just want to fit in and I don't want people to look at us and think we're weird.
Danilo, are you oftenly referenced as the guy who ruins everything? Because that's yeah, right. me. I get that a lot.
Yeah,
somebody will be talking. I'll be like, actually, that's all bullshit. Here's the truth.
People, like, when I have some family reunions, people say, all right, Daniel, how you doing? And don't talk about government. Don't talk about anarchy. How you doing? but yeah, it's a difficult thing to, you know, to make a decision about because, like, you know, like Jeremy said, you don't want to be made look as a hypocrite, right, to your kids. You want to have moral consistency, right? Because that strengthens the position of that you are espousing, right? The morality that you're showing them, that you're trying to live by example, right? And I think that's the big advantage that volunteers have, is that we can live by example. Like statists, they don't live by example, right? There's all these double standards and all these hypocrisies happen, but they just accept it, right? But we actually live consistently. We try to live consistently, and we try to set examples for our kids, and that's what I'm trying to do. And you know, it's a frightening prospect to think about, like they're in their situation. I'm not really sure what I would do in that situation, you know, because I don't know.
Oh, you're up.
it's really hard to say because I think I would stand my ground and I would defend my kids. And I wouldn't allow the state to take them away, but then again, I'm just one guy, you know. But yeah, I think it's so important that we live by example and we show our kids not only by words but by actions, right? And you know, if you really wanted to fit in with society, we would be putting them in government schools. You know, if we really wanted to fit in and make friends and you know, have pleasant conversation at dinner parties. You know, we would be doing all that stuff, but we don't. So obviously, we don't want to fit in. We don't care about fitting in. We don't care about having those kinds of friends. You know, and that's fine with me. You know, as long as I'm morally consistent. So that's my big thing.
You know, Danilo, the other day, my girlfriend looked at me and goes, "You." I find it so odd that you just have the weirdest ability to not give a flying fuck what anybody thinks about you. And I said, babe, when you don't care what anyone thinks about you, people can't use that against you. I care there. About myself. That's it. I care what myself thinks about myself.
Yeah, that reminds me of you, Jeremy, where you say your wife thinks of you as an emotionless robot, right? Because I definitely get that a lot too. She's like, "What are you, like some kind of machine? Like you just don't care what people think of you?" And I'm like, "Well, if you're secure in the things that you believe in, and you really believe them to be true, and you abide by those things, then you shouldn't care about what other people think about you."
Exactly. Yeah, Jeremy. Right?
Yeah, well, that comes from the upbringing, though. That comes from the conformity that everybody's used to. They look at people like us like we're outcast and we're weird and we're always causing trouble just because we think differently than other people do. You know, I didn't always think this way. I used, you know, years ago, I would have looked at the situation like with the Noglers and been like, oh, that's a shame. They probably should have been following the rules a little better, you know, and that's the mentality of a lot of people. And they think, you know, we're just being different just to be different. It's like, well, to a certain extent, that's true because we've seen what the conformist side looks like. And it's not pretty when you step back. So we want to we are different because it's the only way things are going to change. If everybody keeps conforming and keeps get going along to get along, well, the status quo is going to be here forever. And you know, when you really examine it, that's pretty scary because the status quo is not all you know, not all wine and roses like most people think it is. It's there's an ugly truth there that, you know, people that just want to live, people that just want to raise their children to understand what it is to live rather than what it is to conform, are looked at as a threat. You know, that's really what it comes down to. People like the Noglers, people like us, you know, we're a threat to society. You know, I mean the DHS has labeled people like us terrorists, but just to the average citizen, even without that labeling, we're a threat to the status quo. We see the world differently because we took a step back and started to, you know, learn how to use logic and look at the situation and say, hey, wait a minute, there's a lot of contradictions going on here. What's up with that? And when you step back and see that, and then you make the connections and you start living your life a certain way, it really is. It's a threat to everybody else because they would have to question everything they know in order to understand you, and that's a very scary proposition for people. So it's just much easier to call an agent of the state to make sure nothing's going wrong, rather than to question your own beliefs. You know, that's actually something you touched on earlier, Skylar, about, you know, the whole snitches thing, and how you know, to a certain extent, you would appreciate your neighbors keeping an eye on things. Well, yeah, if they go to you first, if they see something and want to say something, if they say it to you, yeah, that's one thing. Like that goes into the whole tribal attitude too. Like if you live in a neighborhood and you know, you make friends with your neighbors and everybody kind of keeps an eye on each other, if something goes wrong, they go to you first. That's perfectly fine. Like that's how a voluntary society would work in my mind. People would, you know, you knock on the door and say, hey, I saw this. Is anything wrong? Is everything okay? Rather than their first instinct to go, you know, literally, you know, I deal with it all the time here on Long Island, just with my dog walking business, where you see people like peering out their windows and like, you know, it's, and unfortunately, I hate to generalize, but it's usually the older people, you know, the elderly people that have nothing, that are home during the day and have nothing better to do. And, you know, I get it from my clients all the time. They'll tell me when I first start working for them, they'll be like, just ignore Miss So-and-so or Mr. So-and-so. They're always, you know, they're nice and they mean well, but they're literally just staring at everything because they've got nothing better to do. But instead of calling you or walking up to you, they'll just call somebody from the state right away. Like that's their first instinct. Just, I got to call somebody.
Idle hands is the devil's playground.
Yeah, and it's just because they don't see reality. They see what the mainstream news feeds them, and they see something's a little off. Oh, it must be wrong. We need to call somebody rather than seeing what actually happens. You know, all too often when, you know, the law enforcement is called in any number of situations and people end up dead for no reason because they go to the wrong house or they shoot your dog or, you know, like any of these things happen. And it happens in CPS cases too, where these, you know, just because somebody saw something that they were too cowardly to walk up to the person and ask, and they just called an agent of the state instead. And then these kids are ripped away. And, you know, even if the person did nothing wrong, you know, it's hard to get that time back. Your kids are taken away from you for a month, 2 months, 6 months, a year while you're dealing with the stuff. Like, unfortunately, what they're dealing with now, I mean, it seems that they have, you know, the Noglers have a lot of support, thankfully, but it does seem like there is a little vindictiveness going on in the system already. And they may, you know, with the judge already saying, well, the CPS didn't, you know, they didn't find anything wrong, but I'm just going to hold out until we deal with this other stuff. Like, they can find anything to extend that, and then the kids are just kept away even longer, and that's where the danger lies, because, you know, there, something bad could happen to them while they're away. Their mind could get poisoned by people that don't understand the situation and are just ignorant and will tell them, oh, your parents are doing these horrible things, and you should be living in a regular house and you should be going to school. And like you said, with the younger ones, that's the toughest because they're still so impressionable that on top of missing mommy and daddy, now they're going to have this new person filling their heads with all these things, and they're going to walk out even more. And they're going to be even more confused. And again, the sad thing is most, I like to think most of those people do have good intentions, but because they know nothing but the state, they'll just they'll feed these kids the same garbage they were fed and not think twice about it. You know, they do the same thing with their own kids. You know, they went, most people will say they hated the public school experience, but then they'll send their kids to public school.
It's the fish and water example.
I can just see the memes now. It's like, if you don't want your kids confiscated, send them to public school.
You know? Comply or die.
Send them to prison.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say one thing. I think that a free society, I would hope that a free society is a society filled with vigilantes. Everybody's a vigilante, you know. And when somebody sees something wrong, rather than calling somebody, you know, because they have a firearm, you know, so they can protect themselves, and, you know, there's just sort of that culture of gun ownership and that culture of self-defense. If they're, you know, brave enough, and, you know, some people will be braver than others, they'll go confront it themselves, or they'll get some neighbors, and then they'll go confront it together, and they'll just take care of it, whatever it is. They'll figure out what's going on together, rather than just calling somebody, you know, and then, you know, washing their hands of it, and then that person who they call has immunity from accountability when they screw up. That's the problem that we have, that we're dealing with now. So yeah, I mean I want people to want vigilance, and I want vigilantes. I just, you know, I think everybody should be a vigilante and be allowed to be a vigilante. You know, it's, that's why I like, you know, the Batmans and the Greens and the Sunderland around, and the police are freaked out calling them vigilantes. You know, people see that and they're like, yeah, they're vigilantes, but they're keeping an eye on, they're helping. I like that. You know, I want more of that.
I mean, that's why I can so carry.
I think people like that too. You know, I think that's why that's the appeal of a lot of these things, and that's why they've endured, is because it's people, and in some cases it's just regular people without powers that are standing up and fighting injustice.
That's half of the reason why I carry or conceal carry pretty much everywhere I go, is, you know, if I see something, I'm going to stop it. You know, if I see someone getting mugged, if I'm in a Taco Bell and someone runs in and holds the place up, I'm going to try to stop it.
Hey, so, I had an idea. I want to get you guys' thoughts. So concealed carry is probably safer than non-concealed carry. Like, you can just carry, but this day and age, that attracts a lot of attention. Right, people will like call the police if they see.
Well, I'm always worried if I open carry. Like, I'll open carry if I'm around friends or I'm like at someone's house or something. But if I'm out in public, I don't want to.
You don't want the attention.
I don't want the attention. Number one, and number two, I'm always afraid somebody could run up and grab it.
Okay.
So, I mean, I know that's probably an irrational fear, but it could happen. Somebody could just snap one day, see that gun on somebody's holster, walk up behind them, grab it, and start shooting.
Good point. So the idea that I had was getting some badges made that are real badges, and I have one when I used to work security. I have a real badge, you know, it's real metal, and something that you can wear if you are going to carry on the outside. You wear this badge, and on the badge, and from a distance, it looks like a police badge, right? And
I so think people will see there's that.
Look at it.
The spectrum for close, impersonating a police officer is really wide.
Okay.
So it might not be a good idea to do that.
Right. What it says on it is citizens watch, observe, and deter, or something along those lines. And that way people, the first look, rather than drawing the attention, they'll see you have a gun, but then they'll also see kind of this badge, and they might, I think it would turn a lot of people away, would kind of turn away a lot of the attention that you would otherwise get. Well, you know, plus if you do see something going on, you can approach and say, hey, what's going on? You know, I think... I don't know. I registered for some there's some police forum. I went and registered because I wanted to ask them the question. What would you do if you saw something? You know, I wanted to get their opinions from actual cops, but they haven't given me posting abilities yet because I'm not filling out their big questionnaire about who I am and stuff.
But you can always go into reddit.com/r/police or protect and serve. That's the police subreddit.
Okay,
protect and serve, and you could just ask in there.
Yeah, I was just
make a throwaway curious account so they can't pick through everything you've ever posted on Reddit.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, in a civilized society, I think what you're talking about would be wonderful. Unfortunately, as Dave touched on, right now, because law enforcement has the monopoly on that service, they will call you, even if you're doing it for the right reasons, you'll be considered, you know, impersonating a police officer, which is wrong.
I think it's really wide. I think the spectrum.
Of course it is.
I think it's like
everything is.
If you say you're police, like, well, they most, can. Yeah.
Most laws are purposely vague for that reason. But that's just another one of those double standards where, you know, people are conditioned to be convinced that, you know, police officers are these heroes no matter what they do because they enforce the law, that impersonating a police officer is like a bigger crime than some other things. Killing a police officer is, you know, punishable by more than just killing the average person. You know, they're put on this pedestal and they're given, you know, people don't see that.
If you kill a police dog.
Well, yeah, and it's the whole reason that equality under the law is complete and utter bullshit. Because you cannot have equality under the law when certain people are held up to a different standard and are literally a separate class. And the punishments for doing things to them or even impersonating them are worse than doing the same exact thing to the average citizen.
I'm surprised police officers haven't started putting uniforms on squirrels and camping out busy roads.
Don't give them
any. You killed an officer! You ran over an officer!
Well, see, I think of that, and I think of that scene in Half Baked with Buttercup. You killed Buttercup. It was a big deal because he killed the police horse. But
yeah.
The one thing you were saying, Skylar, about, you know, the whole idea with the badge and stuff, and, you know, like I said, unfortunately, right now that wouldn't work because you'd get hauled off for impersonating a police officer. But the idea in general is great. That, you know, that's why I'm a big fan of the, even though it hasn't really taken off too much yet, the Peacekeeper app. You know, which that's the whole idea behind it. Connecting with your neighbors and your friends close by. So when an emergency happens, whether it's something that the average person would call the police for, or you would call the fire department for, or you would call an ambulance for, or anything like that, instead of waiting for them to show up, you call people that are literally next door, right down the block. And you know, that whole system is designed where you can instantaneously connect with, you know, all the people on your list and say, hey, this is going on. Who's around? Can somebody help? And, you know, when you're talking about your neighborhood, even in a small town, your neighbors are going to be able to get to you or get to, you know, your location a hell of a lot quicker than any police, fire, or ambulance ever could. You know, and that's why I, you know, I supported that app when it first came out. And, you know, not that I have a lot of money, but I gave some money towards it because I think it's a brilliant idea. It's a way not only for people like us to protect ourselves and, you know, and our families, but it also fosters a bond. You know, it fosters the whole idea of an actual community, not these contrived ones that we're forced into through statism, where, you know, you walk on eggshells around your neighbors because you're, you know, if you're the average person, you're too busy with your, you know, with whatever's going on in your life and all the wonderful distractions to be bothered. But if you're somebody like us, you're worried about what your neighbor might say because you do things a little differently. So the whole idea of community is not really there. And something like that app or something like what you're talking about, Skylar, like that could help foster that idea where people have more trust in one another again, rather than just running off to the police every time they think something is wrong. You know, you turn to your neighbor and say, hey, can I help you out? Hey, you know, I always go back to like the example of what happened during Hurricane Sandy. Like, you know, even all the statists around here that are, you know, so quick to call the police on over everything or call CPS or call just any state agent rather than actually knocking on somebody's door and talking to themselves. In those situations, and that's when the average individual finally sees that the help is not right around the corner like they've been taught their whole lives, and you're forced to go out there and talk to your neighbors and offer each other help. And that sense of community rises, and it's wonderful to see, but then as soon as the power comes back on, and after a couple of weeks, everything goes back to normal, and they all forget about it again. I didn't forget about it. You know, I still thank my neighbor who lives behind me every time I see him, because if it wasn't for him, I would have had no power at all for 2 weeks. You know, he just happened to have power at his house, and he saw me and said, hey, do you want some power? You got an extension cord? You know.
Nice.
Plug your fridge up, huh?
Yeah,
exactly.
The notion that that Skylar brought up about the vigilantes, I just wanted to say something that in a voluntary society, they wouldn't be called vigilantes. They'd just be called people, right? moral people, right?
Peacekeepers.
Because you call them vigilantes now because they're competing with the law enforcement officers, right? But in normal society,
there is just a thing. I don't know if you've read anything on the old American West. You've probably seen there's a book on it, the Not So Wild Wild West, and there's also an earlier Journal of Libertarian Studies article on it. But that's something that they talk about is what was called vigilance committees, where it would be people basically assigned to keep the lookout, and then when there were issues, they would come together, and it was a decentralized thing. So very interesting.
I mean, yeah, I'd like to take this second to advertise my new business endeavor. It's called Dave's Arbitration Services. You can only pay me in Bitcoin, and I will promise you a fair and impartial trial or any dispute resolution.
Didn't George Carlin say a similar thing? He's like, I believe in Joe Pesci because he's like, oh yeah, that's about God. He's like, I don't pray to God, I pray to Joe Pesci because there's about 50% success rate with either one. So Joe Pesci with a bat can solve most of my problems.
Oh man, when Joe Pesci got killed in the last, all right, man, what movie was that? He got killed, and they're like, was it the one where they go out to the cornfield?
Oh, that's Casino.
Casino, yeah. And he looks at him like, oh, it's me that's getting whacked.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's the thing that we are opposing is the double standards that some people can do things with complete sovereign immunity, right? That we, as average regular people, cannot do. You know, it's like Jeremy, you said, is if you kill a cop, it's not like killing a regular person, right? and what comes to mind actually is like 9/11, because it's like it's not only that they just killed 3,000 people, and you know that kind of people kind of forgot that, because now how many people died in the Middle East as a result? Like close to a million people died in the Middle East.
I think more soldiers have died than.
Yeah. So it's kind of like if you kill a cop and then they kill your family, your extended family, your third cousins, because you killed a government agent, right? And they're not a regular person. They don't have, they're not subject to morality. They're not subject to the golden rule, right? They're subject to something else, right? They have special superhuman powers that are granted to them by a magical piece of paper we call the Constitution, right? and people don't see that, or maybe they do see that contradiction, but they just ignore it and they say, you know what? Well, we need this institution because, again, if nobody's out there, harassing people and pulling them over for burnt out taillights or tinted windows, there's gonna be lawlessness. it's gonna be anarchy. But
I love that video. The cop pulls over another cop, but he doesn't realize it's a cop. And the guy gets out of the car and he's like, "What the hell are you doing? Why'd you pull me over?" And he's like, "Put your fucking hands up on the car." And he's like, "I'm not doing that shit." And they get in like a real fight, go to the ground and start punching each other. And like three other cops jump up on him, pull him apart. And he's like, "I'm a fucking cop, you asshole." And they're like, "Oh, well, all right, have a good day." And they turn around and walk away. And it's like, if that, that's just bullshit. Like, whoever threw the first punch should go to jail. Like,
well, it just didn't happen, right?
Oh no, he's special. He's a special human being.
Yeah.
You know what? What did I say on the podcast last night when we were recording "Force to Freedom"? How much crime would there be in the country if Barack Obama went out tomorrow in a press conference and deputized the entire nation into the sheriff's department? Like, what would happen? Like, what would the crime be?
And that reminds me of a recent Tom Woods podcast I was listening to. He's basically saying, if you go to business school and you excelled, like you got really high grades, you paid attention, you learned a lot, and that person most likely would not become a government agent, right? That person most likely would become an entrepreneur and add value to society and produce jobs and increase wealth. the person who becomes a government agent is the guy who got a D, right? So the guy who got a D will most likely go into a regulating agency to regulate and control the guy who excelled. So it's we are controlled and monitored and subjugated by stupid people, basically. The morally bankrupt and the intellectually bankrupt in our society are the ones that are controlling because they
shit attracts flies.
Because they think without them, things will go to hell. Right? So it's a whole perverted Alice in Wonderland world that we're all living in that everyone thinks is normal and is reality. And like you said, Jeremy, like during Hurricane Katrina, like that, everybody thought, you know, oh no, that's the end of the world. And then they go back to, you know, everything comes back. Oh, okay, now back to normal. Cops are superhuman, and I'm just a Joe Schmo. All right, back to normal. Go back to work.
So it's a very short-term memory people have, and that's part of what we're up against on a daily basis. Because even when like the Snowden revelations came out, like more people than I thought were up in arms about it, but then it quickly went away because the next news cycle comes out and people forget and they move on and it's not that important anymore, and it because well things were bad for a little while but they'll get better and we still need this system, and you know it as always it goes back to the appeal to antiquity where it's just well this is the way it's been and you know we may be able to tweak it but we're not going to get much better than this so why bother trying. And I'm
weird. I want an NSA agent to read every word I'm typing.
Well,
I want them to.
I don't.
I want them to read everything I'm typing.
That's one of the few times that I have no problem saying I have nothing to hide. Go right ahead and look.
Yeah. No. It's not I have nothing to hide.
No. I'm saying maybe you'll learn something. That's why.
Yeah, that's what I want them to.
Yeah, I'm not quiet about
spread the
like
seeds
that.
To the NSA agents.
I think Larkin Rose talked about that. Like he was saying, imagine like being the NSA people reading voluntarist messages and emails. And then they're basically indoctrinated by their superiors, you know, do not research this stuff. Just these people are bad. Don't look into this further, okay? This is terrorism at its finest.
I need you to read it like this. Like
they're just trying to manipulate
like read it just the middle of it, like peek through your eye and then like just wipe it out of your brain right after you read it.
Just flag certain words. Don't read. Just you see a word, just flag it. That's it. That's your job. So
and what's the next one though? So I figure we should just give our final comments on this subject, on you know CPS and you know our benevolent monopoly on violence. So Skyler, you have any last words you'd give to people who think that the CPS is an agency that we absolutely need for a civilized society?
Well, I would say look into. There's a guy by the name of Carlos Morales who is a CPS whistleblower, and he wrote a book called Legally Kidnapped where he documents all sorts of horror stories. And the fact is your kids are not safe with CPS anywhere in the world. And so I think that's reason enough. I mean, yeah, I think people should watch out for each other, but I don't think that means that we should give an unaccountable agency the power that they have right now to do that.
Which is essentially a for-profit agency because they have to keep pushing their budget higher and higher. So they're going to find anything they can to take your kids.
Everything's for-profit. Yeah.
Yeah, to justify themselves. Well, they're for-profit like a tick is for blood. They're not really...
Right.
They're not really... Like, they don't need profit. Like, they could literally go in there and never do their job, never take one kid out of their house, and they would still exist. So... They're not really for-profit, but they get these bigger budgets. They can hire more people, get better pay grades, better raises, I guess have a better sense of justification for their job. I mean, I have such disdain for government workers that I really don't feel comfortable saying pretty much everything I feel about it on camera or voice, but I'm not a big fan of anybody who prides their work and is also a welfare recipient. And if you collect the government check, you are a welfare recipient. That's not something you should be pride. You should carry pride in your heart about.
Yeah, according to Carlos Morales, they have quotas, and so they've got to go out. Mm-hmm. They've got to find problems, and if they're not finding problems, they've got to look a little harder or expand the definition of problems.
Oh, it's like the cop that was on TV the other day goes, yeah, I don't have any quotas, but if I don't write enough tickets, I'm not going to have a job. It's like, okay, you're dumb as fuck. I'm glad you have a gun and you have basically immunity.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So any last words, Jeremy, for the status Stasius out there?
Statheists.
Skylar touched on that book that I was going to mention that too. The Carlos Morales book is a really good one. I would just say it's pretty much the same thing. You know, instead of running to the agents of the state, if you think there's something wrong, ask somebody first. You know, don't quickly just run off and or assume something's wrong because it seems different to you. You know, the people may be doing things differently than what you're used to for a myriad of reasons. You know, and there's enough documentation to show that bad things can and will happen when you call the agents of government in when you yourself don't have all the facts. You know, it backfires a lot of the time. You know, we touched on it earlier in the show where, you know, a lot of these people have good intentions, but they don't think because the state's all they've ever known. So their first instinct is just call somebody in the state and they'll come take care of it. And if you don't have all the information, you're not in a position to be making a judgment like that. You know, if you want to get a group of the neighbors together and you all go over together and ask what's going on, that's still better than just picking up a phone before you know what the actual facts are. You know, and I, like I said, I would just encourage people to try diversifying your information a little bit. You know, the Carlos Morales book is a really good one, but like I said, the documentation's everywhere. The stories are there all the time. You know, kids get taken away for something that just because it was deemed illegal by some bureaucrat somewhere at some time. And then, you know, the kids end up in a worse situation. And even if they are lucky enough to escape that unscathed, they've still been taken away from their parents who have done nothing wrong. You know, and just violating some arbitrary edict is not doing harm to your children necessarily. You know, if you're not abusing them, if you're not, you know, starving them, you know, all these other little BS things that people call the agents of the government for, are not real crimes. So there's no reason to jeopardize somebody's family over that. So I would just encourage people to be a little more cautious before just making that phone call. You know, do a little research yourself. Go out there and seek out these stories. You know, you can just do a Google search on pretty much any topic when it comes to CPS and you'll get a bunch of stories kicked back to you. So just look into these things a little more because, you know, I mean, hopefully everything will work out for the Nogglers. It's a very terrible situation they find themselves in just because they're trying to, you know, live a little differently. And, you know, like we've heard from all accounts so far, there wasn't anything wrong with their children. You know, their children seem to be quite happy and they're learning valuable life lessons that most people, probably even the ones that called the police in the first place, will never understand because they have never bothered to try that. So, you know, just because somebody's different in that aspect doesn't make them wrong. It doesn't make you right. So just in any situation, think before you pick up that phone to call any state agent to take care of anything, because the chances of something bad happening to another person or even you are a lot higher than you think.
Yeah, yeah, and I think according to Carlos Morales, the most common reasons that people call CPS are, number one is marijuana use, and number two is homeschooling/unschooling. And I think another one is like leaving your kids outside by themselves for 4 hours. which is still amazing. I mean, like my wife, you know, when she was younger in Romania, she would go off like for hours by herself. You know, it's just amazing the nanny state, how oppressive it's becoming. You know, the whole stranger danger thing that they teach them in government schools. You know, distrust people, basically distrust everyone, and just, you know, again, you know, teach them to be snitches, I guess, in a sense, you know. But yeah, just us homeschooling and unschooling, we are already considered extremists or terrorists or threats to the status quo. You know, so just that alone, forget about, you know, abuse, just that alone, they could call CPS. Like, anybody can call CPS, you know, and just make your life a living hell. And people have to understand the ramifications of that simple call. And like you said, Jeremy, it's like people, this is another thing that statism does and belief in government does, is it estranges people from each other, right? It's no, you no longer have an incentive to befriend your neighbor, you know, or, you know, or get to know the people in your community if, you know, you can rely on the state for income or for, you know, for housing or for medicine or whatever, you know, rely on the state for all these things. What's the incentive to get to know your neighbor? There is no incentive, you know? So it's encouraging isolation, you know, true isolationism, not the kind that we're thinking about, but true stay in your house and just like kind of be a hermit, which, you know, in a sense it's fine, but it's like, you know, I can speak for myself that I encourage people, talk to people, you know, get to know people, get to know your neighbor. They're not as weird as you think most of the time, you know? We're all just people trying to make a living, trying to, you know, put food on the table and educate your kids and make sure they have a good, you know, moral upbringing and make, you know, try to get them to make a better world for themselves than, you know, we grew up in ourselves. So yeah, that's it. Just talk to people. You know, when you jump to conclusions about somebody, when you assume, what do you do? You make an ass out of you and me, right? So, you know, just talk to people. Simple message. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for the conversation. Thank you, Skylar, for coming on to talk about the Inaugural family and CPS. Wonderful conversation. So this is the Seeds of Liberty podcast. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care.
Yeah, and you can support us through Bitcoin, Patreon. I just started that up, our Amazon Associates link on the website.
Right. Sorry, missed out on the yeah. So give us value. Give us value. Talking about freedom is not it's not cheap or easy. It's difficult, and that's why we choose to do it. Not because it's the easy path, but because it's the right and moral path. Right. So awesome. Thank you very much for the conversation. Have a good day, everyone.